Welcome to Casterbrus, the Doctor Who podcast. My name's Christian Corley and with me is James McLean. A couple of nights ago, I was busy, so I missed watching Power of the Doctor live. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I've missed watching most of Doctor Who live for the past 5 years or so, maybe longer. So I've been relying on BBC iPlayer a lot, so maybe it's not going to matter that much. And then I opened something. I don't think it was Twitter. I think it was Facebook, which is a surprise because usually Facebook is just family stuff. And there was a face there. And I thought, oh, good God, no way. So we'll probably come to that in due course. James McLean, we are here to talk about The Power of the Doctor and I guess some of the things that have happened since The Power of the Doctor, because, of course, we're talking on Tuesday. Power of the Doctor was on Sunday. Did you watch it live?
Yeah, I did. Yes, yeah. I watched it live.
Yeah, I thought you...
For the first time in many, many, many years, sitting here traditionally with a television on my sofa.
Did you hide behind the sofa?
I'm quite a narrow chap, but there is actually no room behind my sofa, even for my narrow dimensions. I'm going to be eating some digestives through this. I've got some coffee and digestives.
Can you time it so you do that whilst I'm talking?
No, well, what I was thinking I would do, well, you know that thing where they sort of so question is, if there's a forest and a tree falls, if no one's there, has it actually happened? Well, I suppose I've got the answer to this, really, is that when I'm eating a biscuit, there will actually be silence because I will mute it. So you'll know I'm having a biscuit.
Okay.
Because there is no sound.
Okay, well, listen, before you crack on with that biscuit,
yeah,
the important thing.
Hurry up, I'm tempted, go on.
Is it a chocolate digestive or a plain digestive?
Oh, no, it's just a plain digestive. I'm no longer a man of such frivolities as having chocolate digestives. I have them plain and nasty, like the dirty boy I am.
Okay, I do love our chats. The Power of the Doctor was...
Oh, yes.
I don't believe it was originally going to be the final episode of Jodie's run, or certainly not in the form that we saw it, because it's been co-opted by the BBC to be part of its 100th anniversary/centenary celebrations. It is, of course, the end of Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall's run on Doctor Who. We've mentioned it a few times in the preceding podcasts. This is, unlike some of our other recent podcasts, this is what the Doctor, the 10th Doctor in particular, likes to refer to as a fixed point in time, because anything that we talk about in this, it's very fixed around this episode. So, like, last time we talked about speeches in Doctor Who, didn't we? And before that, we talked about definitive Doctor Who's. Whereas this one is about Doctor Who, a specific episode, a specific event in the series that is already having ramifications. I watched it very late on. We'd been to a dance competition and I wasn't competing, it's my children, I should just clarify there. And we were quite tired when we got home, and that was the first day.
This sounds positively 1958, do carry on.
And we just chilled out in front of the television. Kerry was a little bit sleepy at this point. She's really tired because she does all... Basically, for safeguarding reasons, fathers aren't allowed to go into dance competitions backstages to help prepare the children. It has to be mothers only, or sisters, or stepwives, or whatever, that sort of thing. So Kerry has to do all the work. So she's looking after three children, getting ready for dance competitions. There's probably about six throughout the day. So tired. We put it on at about 10:30, maybe even 11. We settle down to watch The Power of the Doctor. And I have to say, I don't usually watch Doctor Who new, fresh, in that state of kind of tiredness. And so I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I was a little bit unsure about the whole Tegan and Ace thing early on. And I think until the... there are spoilers in this, by the way, dear listener. So go and watch it if you haven't already. I think they worked better when they're actually alongside their own doctors for those moments. But I really enjoyed it. It felt like, as much of Flux did, it felt like things were finally feeling like Doctor Who for Chris Chibnall, only for it to be taken away from him in the end because it's not his show anymore. Now, Kerry, on the other hand, didn't enjoy it at all. She felt there was too much nothing happening. But it's likely she probably fell asleep a couple of times by her own admission. So, I mean, it's a very kind of superficial summary of the show, and we'll probably talk into a few aspects of it. But, I mean, what's your general takeaway from it? Did you enjoy it? Were you happy at the end? Because, you know, you have your great coinage of you can't have a bad middle and a bad beginning, but you can't have a bad ending. How did you feel about it?
I feel the same. That adage is exactly the same for digestive biscuits. The first bite can be bad. The middle bite can be all right. But the last one is what matters. It's always the last one. I genuinely enjoyed it, and I think there's something weird about when kind of reviewing something that you don't want to sound eager or dismissive. But yeah, I mean, I think to be honest, it's been fairly emblematic of what he's done throughout his era, and I know there's so much dislike for his work, but I thought it kind of didn't feel out of place from what he's done before. I thought it was very, very good, but I think also it felt like it wasn't like suddenly I know what you're saying and I don't disagree with you. It does really feel like it was coming together in a way that didn't always do in the past, but at the same time it did feel like his stuff. There's things in there that I still, I'm someone who, as I've said before, as we've both said to some degree, that we've been on the side of the sort of vocal fandoms. We've always been a little more on the sort of sympathetic side to Chibnall than many. I've never particularly liked his Cybermasters. It's an idea which is good in your head or in the shower, but I don't like the design.
Or DWM, maybe.
Yeah, why do they like them?
I don't know. I'm just saying it's the sort of thing that might happen in the comic strip, indeed.
I see what you mean. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely. I could certainly see that being a Lee Sullivan design. Totally, I get that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
On TV, it's just a little on the nose. I think you could have had Cybermen with just that sort of slight mottling on the surface of their armor, but the actual sort of Time Lord, shall we call them ears? it just looks a bit, I don't know, it's just a little too on the nose. But I think his era to me has always been actually kind of fresh. It's trying to do things, it's trying to do different things. It's not just, and I'm not saying for a moment that Moffat didn't try to do different things to Davis, because he did.
Yeah.
But I did really feel that Chibnall was making a concerted effort to actually freshen up the format, try an experiment and do different things. And some of them didn't land. But then, like the Slitheen, I don't think really ever did land very well. And, you know, Moffat would often drop back to the same tropes of something in your eye, something you can hear, something just out of the corner, you know, your peripheral. Those sort of things would often, you know, pop back up. No, none of these show creators are perfect. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that's the bottom line, isn't it? I enjoyed it. I was never looking at my watch. A bit like what we said with Flux. It was fast. It was crazy. It was creative. Was it overly cluttered? Was there maybe one too many characters in it? Possibly, yeah. But overall, I thought it was good. Very good.
Yeah.
And also for nostalgia. I mean, I absolutely adored it for the nostalgia as well. But yeah, as a story. I thought it was good. Is it Vinder? Is it Vinder his name? Brain is tickling me with a name of a character.
Yeah, Vinder.
It is Vinder. It's Vinder,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
No, he's not Vinder K. That's another guy. It's just Vinder.
Of course it is. Findy, yes. I didn't actually know that at all. I just barely pay attention to reality, I think. I thought he was fine in it, and I thought, Axe did a good job. Did kind of feel he was kind of peripheral, that you didn't need him.
Well, there was a slight feeling of a kind of greatest hits of Chibnall and Doctor Who as a whole, I suppose, about the entire proceedings. Storyline-wise, well, Chibnall's Doctor Who, and then the sort of peripheral stuff, such as companions meeting up at the end, and certain people like Vinda and Graham just kind of turning up when you don't really expect them to. That's more of a kind of a general BBC thing. Last time, as we were kind of getting into the mood for The Power of the Doctor, I referred to the 1971 movie Nicholas and Alexandra, in which Tom Baker, Tom Baker, played Rasputin. And yes. I mentioned how it is kind of quite closely linked to Doctor Who. Also, you've got Michael Jason in there in the role of Tsar Nicholas. And obviously, Michael Jason's later the Valiard. And in The Power of the Doctor, we've got the Master as Rasputin. And then, he's not just Rasputin. There is a Nicholas in there as well, which, you can take that however you want. But then you got Boney M as well, which, we've seen the Master getting funky with Earth disco tracks in the past, haven't we? So it wasn't completely... I mean, it's a very silly moment, but I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, I kind of... I'm always mixed on this Master. There are times I really think he's great, and the delivery is spot on. There's never a point, there's never a point where I think the delivery isn't spot on. I just sometimes feel can be a little too on the nose too often. And I think I leveled the same complaint about Missy initially as well. And I feel there's sometimes a bit of that. I still enjoyed it. I thought he was used well throughout. There was a feeling of, and I think what's been very good in the new series, but especially in Chibnall's ones, is that the Master does feel very empowered.
Yeah, he had some great plans.
He had some great plans. It sort of made, it was crazy, it was overly convoluted, but it kind of made sense, and it felt like someone who, you'd be hard to actually stop. And I think that was a really smart bit of, well, not smart bit, right? A good bit of writing, really.
Yeah.
Because, I think even in Moffat's era, the Master could sometimes, and even Missy, whether it was Missy or Sim, could kind of feel like they were beatable. So they weren't quite really on it. But the plans in this felt, really do feel like a, Master villain, to not want to coin the pun. But it was really good.
So elsewhere in the episode, we have, we've got Sophie Aldred and Janet Fielding come back as Ace and Tegan. As I've already mentioned, I had some reservations about this. And I thought maybe Sophie Aldred could pull it off, and I wasn't entirely sure Janet Fielding could. But I think I probably feel the other way around about things now. But that might just be more familiarity with Sophie Aldred in appearing in stuff over the past 20, 30 years, whereas Tegan hasn't appeared in anything really up until relatively recently compared with that. I thought Janet Fielding was excellent. I know she's largely retired from television acting, but you wouldn't have thought so, would you?
No, they were both really good. I thought both were fine. I think Aldred, to be fair to Aldred, I think in some respects is the harder part because it's the more unbelievable character. There's not a horrendous amount which grounds Ace. So you've got to play a grounded character which is believable, especially now where you could perhaps be a little more loose in 1988. But at the same time, you've still got to be able to pull off those things of someone 35 years ago. And yes. I think they both did a really good job. I kind of thought they were well implemented. I think, as we'll obviously probably going to get to, I think, and as you alluded to, I think the use of the reunions for them and their doctors was really needed. I was finding the deliberate disconnection with Jodie kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
And we've seen, and obviously this is playing on, and I think what was quite interesting with Chibnall's work here is it was playing on a lot of tropes of the new series as well. So it wasn't just calling back as a centennial of all the nostalgia for all the old 40, 50 year olds. There was a lot there talking, you know, there for the 20, 30 year olds. So, you know, a lot of it was visual things like the Journey's End all around the console was, you know, obviously a clear riff on that. There was something else I was just thinking about, which we were talking about, Sophie Aldred. No, it's gone. But there was a couple of things which I felt like, you know, you are kind of riffing off things which have been done before deliberately. I don't know, even, you know, you got those two booths, which kind of felt a bit end of timey.
Yeah.
Maybe. They're just little things which were just nods to the past, which I thought was quite impressive. And again, like you said, the sort of taking on the Scissor Sister moment for John Sim as the master and then doing the Rasputin, you know, this was clearly not him just copying. This was him paying a lot of homage to both the new series and the old series as well.
The other thing is not just the two booths with The End of Time. There's also a marked similarity with the TV movie. Everyone's forgotten. Master wants the Doctor's lives, doesn't he, in the TV movie?
Oh, yes, of course, absolutely.
So he's essentially going to become the Doctor. As the Doctor says, he becomes me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, and... go on.
I was just going to say, I think that's all done pretty subtly. I mean, the paintings as well, you know, the paintings in the galleries kind of was a callback to Time of the Doctor. There's lots of little things in there which are just very subtle, so the point where it doesn't feel like copying, but just kind of nods and acknowledgements to the history of the show and not forgetting the more recent history of the show.
I laughed out loud when I saw all the Master's faces on those paintings.
Yeah.
Which
even the train, actually, just thinking, because we did have the train for the Capaldis, the midnight.
And the beginning of, back in 2018, the beginning of Jodie's era, that was a train. It started on a train, didn't it, as well?
Yeah. Absolutely. I thought that was really quite well done.
How do we feel about referring without any explanation to an event that happened 40 years ago between the Doctor and the Fifth Doctor and Tegan?
Oh, what, Adric?
The Adric thing, yeah.
I was actually quite moved by it.
Right.
Because there was a little, I'm not sure where your angle is here, but I may be on a hook here or not, I don't know. But my feeling at the time when I was watching was thinking, this is absolutely incredible, because I can still vaguely remember as a child seeing the silent credits to Earthshock and not being aware that it would be like 40 years in a weird way before there would be any sort of on-screen I suppose resolution to it, you know. I'd have to wait to that point 40 years to actually see them actually talk about this again, beyond the brief comment at the beginning of the next episode, which Time Flight, wasn't it? It was that I think was blowing me away a lot watching this episode. Was just, and we've said this before, how we're seeing this a lot more these days out beyond Doctor Who, but these sort of callbacks to our past, and it's not so much nostalgia. I'm not feeling emotional because of nostalgia. Mine's not, it's not that at all. It's about a reunion. It's about being reunited in a weird way. It's like a family reunion or sort of a high school reunion. It's that sort of feeling. It's not digging up and trying to remember what it felt like back then or get those feelings. And I'm seeing Ace appear talking to McCoy's Doctor. I'm not thinking, oh God, it's like being back in 1988. To me, it's thinking, my God, these characters are still with me. They're still here. They're still living. They're still relevant. And that to me is extremely emotional. So I think, you know, we talk about nostalgia, and I think that is actually a really outmoded way of talking about what television's doing at the moment. It's not about nostalgia, not in that way. You know, nostalgia is more about going to a place and trying to remember what it was like at a time, to feel that feeling as if you were young. That to me is what nostalgia is about. This isn't about feeling young. This is about young things from my youth becoming old. It's the other way around. It's a really incredible, powerful feeling.
Well, I suppose on that note, we should flip to one of the later scenes in the episode then, when the various companions are meeting up in a sort of Linda-style meeting room. And that can't have been accidental either. With Bonnie Langford and Katie Manning and William Russell.
I know. That was incredible. I was really, I wasn't expecting that. So, I mean, we between the two of us, we kind of had a feeling that there might be some sort of returns other than just Aldred and Fielding. We sort of said that in the podcast that we thought there was going to be more. We did. I mean, I was totally wrong. I thought Donna would be there. I thought, as I said in previous podcasts, I thought this would move to Shooty and the Tennant Doctor would be someone that would come from left field. And yeah, totally wrong. And it was just, it was a real delight to get that scene. And the way it unfolded was brilliant, because I wasn't waiting for it. So you get this moment with, you know, where you get Graham and Dan together and you think, oh, okay, that's unusual. Well, what's that about? And they talk about, didn't you get the message? You think, okay, still don't get what this is about. Then you start getting this talk, this, as you say, this meeting, almost this AA feel. Yes. And then getting that feeling at that point, like, okay, are we going to start seeing, we're probably going to see, you know, the one people from this episode, but are we going to see anyone else here? And I wasn't expecting, suddenly, when it must be when Katie Manning appeared, there was a bit of me which was like, well, I'm not too surprised about that, but that's nice.
Yes.
Like but then I was very surprised to see, because I think the shot, it was quite a clever shot, because you had Dan in front of us and then you had William Russell next to him, so you couldn't quite see him, but you could see Mel, as I recall. So it's like, oh, there's Mel. And then just about seeing Russell, I just couldn't believe it. Because I think, if you've been following these podcasts, one, well done. Two, you're an idiot. Three, you're probably aware that I've said many times, and, you know, Brian's always agreed on this when he's been around, and I think you have as well, you know, the opportunities to get William Russell back in are not, you know, obviously get less as the gentleman gets older, but also it becomes almost more imperative as the series gets older itself, is to sort of landmark these really important people to its legacy. And while Ian's had these little bits of peppering of stuff in the high Coal Hill School, you know, being the being one of the is he one of the governors? I can't remember.
Yes, he was.
And then we've got the sort of mention in Sarah Jane Adventures, which we will obviously have to take with a pinch of salt from what we've seen. But this was just a real, and obviously his actual cameo in Adventures in Time and Space. But this, or Space and Time, I can't remember which way around.
An Adventure in Space and Time, played the security guard.
Yeah, or Space and Time. Yeah, clever, very clever. But this was just what it was. And there was did I mention this to you in a chat? I think I did. Oh no, maybe I didn't. I was looking through some of the comments on one of the reviews for this, and someone had said they'd been in a Sophie Aldred Q&A and they just dropped out of it. And apparently near the end, during that scene, because William Russell was 97, as we know, but just in case you didn't know, apparently he started to get a little confused. Yeah, I think it was just becoming a bit much. And it was, we were sitting next to Dan, and they talked and tried to calm him down. And I thought that was just a really kind of sad, but, you know, it's just a nice sort of camaraderie there. If that's not an apocryphal story. But yeah, just to get him for that moment, he has one small line, but I think that's enough. I think it's that I wouldn't have expected any more.
No.
And maybe a few years ago, perhaps, you could have. But at this time, you know, to have a 97-year-old retired actor come in to play that scene is, you know, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is. Mm. It's I was absolutely gobsmacked, for want of a better phrase. I was just absolutely stunned to see him. I'm delighted as well.
I was very moved by it.
Yeah.
It was very moving. And the one thing I did wonder, is, you know, does it, is this now a Big Finish? Are now they going to have to start really thinking about, are they going, well, I'm sure they're already writing it, you know, the very final Ace Doctor canon adventure. Because, I mean, while obviously there's been times in the New Adventures, certainly where Ace and the Doctor fell out, as suggested in this episode.
Yes.
Obviously, New Adventures carried it on to Reconciliation. I wonder whether the BBC, whether Big Finish will now look to sort of do that as they did with, you know, the final Sixth Doctor.
Yeah.
Whether they will actually...
Well, there wasn't really any need to do that, was there? You didn't have to introduce that element for... Did he? You know, they just wandered off into the sunset or into some woods back in 1989. And, you know, as far as the viewing public are concerned, if anyone can remember that, that was it. And all these other things have happened in all the other media. And there's been fallings out and reconciliations across all of them. And now Chibnall's reintroduced the idea that the last time they saw each other, they'd fallen out. It's actually quite funny.
Because, I mean, it's in a sense created another timeline. Which is kind of cool. But yeah, I would imagine Big Finish will do an episode, do a story which will try and bring their material into the close, to close this up, but which I think would be kind of cool.
Yes.
But yes, it was it's a shame when you have to do that. I mean, there's a bit of me which is like, I know why you did it. Because you wanted to create some sense of conflict for this story to resolve. You know, that's a natural part of narrative. At the same time, there's a little bit of me which is like, well, as soon as you, unfortunately, with this massive world of Media Who, you're automatically going to start contradicting something. And, you know, even more recently with Sophie Aldred's book, that runs on the assumption that, you know, Ace meets the Doctor for the first time. And so, you know, oh, that's out the window as well. It's
yeah.
You know, it's Graham, Yaz, the original team. And that's gone. And he's okay. And so it's always a bit of a shame. But then it's Doctor Who. So as we say, multiverse, multiple iterations, timeline changes. It doesn't make a big difference one way or the other. But it is interesting. And I, as I think we've said before, it's very nice to get, even if that closure is like a new sense of closure, in the sense that there's a new problem that we probably weren't aware about, they had to resolve. It's nice to have that acknowledgement of that relationship and a resolution for Aldred's character. I would not entirely be surprised if we see her again, to be honest.
Well, time will tell, won't it? Just a quick mention of the other Doctors. We had David Bradley as the first Doctor.
Oh, God, yeah.
Unsurprisingly. Peter Davison as the Doctor. Colin Baker as the Doctor. Sylvester McCoy as the Doctor. And Paul McGann continuing his slow morph into George Orwell as the Doctor. and that marvellous voice as well. And also getting to wear his costume, presumably because it fits him. But then again, Peter Davison had a costume made, didn't he? So, and they were all wearing their costumes, weren't they? We didn't see a ghosty Colin Baker, did we, outside of the Edge?
No, we didn't. No, we only saw Peter and Sylvester.
Yeah.
And it was, the McGann shot was really weird. At one point, it looked almost like his head had been superimposed on there. I think it was just probably the angle they had it and the way that they comped it and everything. But again, that was really nice because, again, we kind of had a suspicion this sort of thing would happen, but you were never too, you know, didn't know for certain. And it was a way, I think we've always talked about the way that you could do it. You just do it inside his head, inside the Doctor's head.
Yeah.
And they've done it in the books before, and it worked really well. I mean, it was that nice interplay as well between McGann and McCoy, which is kind of nice because although they do actually obviously have a connection, both as characters moving one to the other as their segue, but also because, you know, the two actors work together, which I doubt they saw each other in this. But, it was nice the way that all those Doctors did kind of feel like they had a little moment. It wasn't just a simple line. They all had some kind of measure of meaning to that scene. And then to have McCoy, and as we've said, Davison, do some really nice bits with their corresponding. I thought Davison was excellent. I thought,
yes, he was. But then Davison again, he's really always excellent in everything.
He is, but I'm always aware that in Big Finish, his character is always kind of feels a little more older in the way that he performs him. Well, this felt like very much like the Fifth Doctor from the 80s, which yeah. I thought was kind of cool. Yeah, I mean, it was great all the way through. It wasn't, I mean, I never looked at my watch once. It was rolling through at a rip-roaring rate. There was loads of weird tangents it was going in, loads of clever things. Like we say, some of those things, I think what was really clever, now we've been talking about, is how so many of those things which were quite creative in themselves were all built on borrows from the past. So almost like, you know, the Cyberman Russian doll, which again yep. calls back to Doomsday.
Yep. And you've got the Daleks burrowing into the Earth again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've got the master, I know this isn't exactly what you're talking about. He does refer to dressing for the occasion at one point as well, doesn't he? Which is another callback to the TV movie.
There's also the two police boxes is very Legopolis, yep. with a slightly different, you know, there's lots of things. The ha 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 on the door is obviously a callback to Bad Wolf. There's lots of little fun things going in there, but they don't feel like they're trivializing the actual story. I'd like to think that even if people aren't massive fans of Chibnall's era, that it was a good example of, you know, or a good reminder, as we have to say with Moffat and with Davis, even if you don't like them, you know, they are very good writers.
Yeah.
Very weird, mad episodes. Okay. Yeah, and then you obviously have the weird out with Tennant, which...
Well, we'll come to that in a moment. Before we do come to that, I need to tell you that I polled our Facebook page for thoughts on the episode.
Okay.
So we'll have a look at some of those.
Okay.
Phil Vernon enjoyed it, but a lot was thrown at the screen and he had no idea what was going on for some of it. Jonathan Roberts calls it a Whovian wet dream and a good send-off for Jodie. Nick Caulfield thought he made it work, but did the Daleks a disservice. Andrew Brooke, so much better than the rest of this era. Simon Warner declares it silly and fun. Lewis David Blaney, brilliant but bloody bonkers. Guy Grist, that was a huge amount of fun. Stephen M. Dorr, good fun, reasonably coherent and not overly sentimental. Liam Forrestal, mess. Rob Preston, well-paced, badly plotted, fan-pleasing, pretty lunkin' nonsense. Chibnall saved his best till last. Trevor Arthur, Chibnall pulled out his unused ideas notepad and got them all into one brilliant action-packed episode. So much good stuff, regenerating Cybermen, old Doctors use well, and a top story. Rich Goldtree, took a while to get going, but overall a decent ending for Jodie. Vincent Price, not the...
Really?
I like the Master Rasputin link and the companion tie-up. The Cybermen and Dalek mashup a bit messy, and we really wanted to kill off this timeless child thing by having the Master use this as a lie to cover his real plan to steal the Doctor's regenerative power for his own. But that didn't happen, obviously. Rob Cyberman, big names today. It was great, but the regeneration of the Doctor's clothes made no sense. Trey Clemister, batshit crazy. Could have been much worse, has been for 4 years. Nigel Webb, bloody brilliant. I mean, there's a lot there that I would agree with, the good and the bad in there. And I've skimmed through. There's everyone, thank you very much for your comments. There's a lot of people have put in a lot of effort into typing away on Facebook to us rather than, I don't know, talking to the work colleagues or whatever. Well, I don't know what people do on Facebook these days.
But it's a wasteland, isn't it? It's great.
Yes. So thanks to all of you. Yeah. Well, I guess this has some sort of relevance, so really we need this. David Tennant is the Doctor. And not only is he the Doctor, he isn't like an alternative universe Doctor who's flown in. He doesn't appear to be an accidental Doctor. He appears to be the actual Doctor, and is described on the BBC website. Well, Shuti Gatwa is referred to as the 15th Doctor. So David Tennant's the 14th Doctor. Who's what? That's a surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think we were thinking multiverse, weren't we?
Yeah, I was not thinking they'd go down here. It's still, I'm still not sure about whether, I mean, I like it because I like Tennant. I think he's a good actor. I think it's, again, something fresh and different. It still feels a bit weird. I don't know. I just kind of feel like, I did wonder whether this is something to do with, so when is this, have they said, it's 2023 is all they've said?
The next three episodes are all in 2023, apparently, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, I think the sad thing is, yeah, I mean, if we'd had, if you didn't know Tennant was going to be there, that would have been a far more mind-blowing. It's just a shame that they obviously had to start production before this aired.
Yeah.
So there was no way you could hide.
Well, I mean, I suppose it depends what your engagement with television shows being reported on in the media is. Kerry was absolutely stunned. It was like there was like silence, and she was like, "But that's David Tennant." So she's not.
So she doesn't listen have a to your Doctor podcast.
Who, exactly, and she doesn't have her own Doctor Who podcast, and she doesn't buy Doctor Who magazine or read Doctor Who books. She just watches it. So I think we can safely say this had a good it had the right effect for people who aren't tuned in.
If you didn't know, I mean, it's a wonderful. It's still just frustrating when you can sort of keep all the other Doctors pretty much secret.
Yes.
But you, because I mean, what my point is, I think if the production had started after this, then you could have kept that as quiet as the rest of the Doctors.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying therefore they should. I'm just saying it's just unfortunate that overlap means that there was some leaks there on something which, once you knew, you couldn't really. And as I say, unless you did the sort of things we were talking about, there was no escape from people working out how it was going to go. And it, I don't know, it's a little bit, because everyone's going, oh, he's going to degenerate. And I kind of like the fact that he hasn't. That's not really what's happened here. It's not like he's gone back to regeneration. He's not degenerated. It's clearly the messing around in the episode has created another version of the Tennant. We'll find out.
We'll find out, won't we? Russell T.
Something
Davies.
Something we haven't talked to. Go on.
Well, I was going to say, Russell T. Davies has told the BBC website, if you thought the appearance of David Tennant was a shock, we've got plenty more surprises on the way. The path to Shooty's 15th Doctor is laden with mystery, horror, robots, puppets, danger and fun. And how is it connected to the return of the wonderful Donna Noble? How, what, why? We're giving you a year to speculate, then all hell lets loose. So presumably that year to speculate means that 60th anniversary episode one lands in November 2023, and then two more episodes over the seasonal period, maybe.
That seems a bit insane.
It does.
Shot it now.
It does. But, I can only go along by what it says. Now, if they're all hour-long specials, which would seem likely, although based on what we just had, that was a 90-minute special, there is... That's a lot of David Tennant, isn't it? That's 3 hours, perhaps, of David Tennant before Shooty Gatwa takes control of the TARDIS. So is that a problem for the incoming Doctor?
Is that really what he meant? I'm not disagreeing with you, but I never really saw it as being. I got the impression it was a one-off, but they.
Well, there's supposed to be 3 one-hour specials or three episodes that are special episodes in 2023, and it's implied, but it's not stated either way, because they've been very clever, that David Tennant is the Doctor in those three episodes. And then Shooty Gatwa comes along in 2024. Now, if that is the case, it is weird, but does it not also, unless he's absolutely stunning as the Doctor, does he not, he has a very big shoes to fill, doesn't he? In quite a short space of time as well.
This is kind of why I was always a bit slightly uncomfortable with this movement of it. Just kind of it. I know it's not, but in some ways, in my head, it felt almost like it's hard enough to actually come into the role, but then to actually give a fan favorite first, and then take the fan favorite away, and then it's you. that just feels like you just amp up the the pressure,
yeah,
and an audience expectations. But I don't know, it's one of those things, isn't it? Do we need to judge now? We don't.
Oh no, no.
I hope it's not a year. I think that seems I can't believe it is. I can't believe they've gone into production now to have something at release in 2023 November, literally over a year's time. That does seem a bit weird.
It does, but then again, it might have something to do with schedules and whatever. It might have something to do with. Also might have something to do with today's news as well, concerning Disney.
Could do.
If you're not aware, dear listener, Doctor Who is going to be on Disney Plus outside the UK and Ireland. It says new episodes of the series starring Shooty Gatwick in the title role will debut on the BBC and Disney Plus in late 2023. So that throws in some more confusion for us. Goodness me, what is going on? We've also got a new logo has been revealed as well today. Have you seen that?
No, I've not.
There's a diamond logo that looks like it's come out of a movie, basically. It's all shiny and sparkly and regenerate-y. It looks really nice.
Okay.
I don't know if they're going to be using that long term or if that's kind of... Because they've kept the diamond logo going, haven't they, in the BBC for non-current Doctor stuff. So it might just be a new version of that. But it looks very nice. So, that regeneration then. It was a surprise. What's going on with the clothes, do you think? Do you think that's just to save David Tennant wearing a dress? Because I've seen him wearing dresses in plenty of occasions in comedies...
He wouldn't have been wearing a dress anyway, would he? Because she doesn't wear a dress.
No, she doesn't wear a dress, does she? She wears sort of culottes or something, doesn't she?
I hope that's not the reason. I wondered whether it was just a callback, because obviously the Hartnell Troughton played a similar move, didn't it? With with the cape springs back and he's in a brand new costume. So I thought it was just for the ease of it, but then perhaps that is it. Perhaps there was a kind of feeling that it would take away from the moment if people were distracted by him wearing an outfit which looked a bit silly on him.
Mm.
Which in a sense is, I don't know, I still don't know how I feel about that. I kind of understand, and yet they could have I was just going to say they could have changed her outfit for the last scene, as she strips away her identity and wears something quite simple. But I don't know. I think you're probably right. I think it was to actually make sure that the change and gender shift didn't look odd to audience, didn't distract audiences from what they wanted.
Yeah. David Tennant says it was weirdly, weirdly straightforward and noted, he was talking to BBC's Today radio show on Monday morning. There's a bit of a precedent in the show that all doctors maybe turn up for a special now and again, but usually in cohort with the current team. So to get another run around the park was a little joy I never saw coming. What a lovely, lovely thing to get to revisit something that was such a wonderful, happy, significant time in my life. It's like being given the loveliest present. It's been an absolute joy, which sounds like he's finished.
Yeah.
So
this is what I mean.
Yeah.
I thought this was just like a one episode wonder, which is why we've really only seen stuff. And also in the trailer, the very last shot of Shooty was on the same point. And
it appeared
like the same
to be,
space,
didn't it? Yeah.
But without the jacket. So I don't know. I got the impression it was a single episode, but we'll see. I mean, I think that would make more sense, but like you said, we'll see.
The BBC has been accused of duplicity and dishonesty by the owners of Durdle Door over Jodie Whittaker's final scene as the Doctor. They seem to think that David Tennant and Jodie Whittaker were actually up there, whereas I'm pretty sure that they weren't.
I don't think that was their point. I think I could be wrong. And you could be right. They did genuinely think that. I think what it was is, from what I could get from what you sent, was that they got the permission to use that landmark.
Yeah.
And then that landmark with them comped onto it. The concern being a landmark where people do already go to do ridiculous cliff diving.
Accentuate risk in that area
and by place creating that scene, they have never met
Doctor Who fans, have they?
Well, I mean, I can kind of see what they mean to a degree, because I mean, you know, how many people have tried to do the Titanic pose in different? I'm sure that moment has been replicated in various dangerous places. I sort of can understand their trepidation. I don't imagine it's going to. I wouldn't have thought it's going to be a big risk. But then maybe they know better. You know, actually managing that area. Maybe there is a concern. But I hope not. I mean, I'd hope that people. It's a difficult one because it's not like earlier. I was thinking, well, you know, people didn't go up to the top of the Tower of London to replicate Christmas Invasion, but then that wasn't a sort of pivotal, you know, symbolic scene. Perhaps that is the worry. I don't know. It's
I suppose. Well, anyway,
I mean, I thought it was nice to actually get her out of the box rather than have another one in the set.
Yeah.
So that was nice. I thought it was quite a nice scene for her. I thought it was quite tastefully done, and it wasn't over-talked. It was quite gentle.
We did get another human candle regeneration, though, didn't we?
We did, yes. And I'd still love to know whether that was just, you know, an accidental replication of the point that Christopher Eccleston's Doctor was expelling time energy from Parting of the Ways.
Yeah.
Rather than that's how people regenerate, as it has become. That's kind of my feelings, is that's that what that was. He was holding in all that time energy and explodes out of him as he regenerates.
It's a bit like the Jedi's, isn't it? All dressing like they live on Tatooine undercover.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Yes. One thing I was going to say I did like about the episode goes back to some of the things we were talking about. I thought they handled the Doctor and Yaz's out very tastefully.
Yeah.
Far more tastefully than I was expecting after this kind of teenagery will they, won't they in the Sea Devils one. And in this, there was something which I thought was quite mature. And I thought the way that they had Yaz handle it was really nice as well.
Well, actually, they're
someone
like...
Someone was upset.
Those two episodes are like two different writers.
Very much so, yeah.
It's baffling how... I mean, we reviewed it and we weren't complimentary about it. It was not a good episode. It wasn't one that you would revisit. It didn't...
And I haven't.
Yeah, it was a bit of a mess in places and wasn't enjoyable and didn't end well. I don't know why that keeps happening. And
it's like a digestive, isn't it?
Yes. And it didn't end well, yeah. And
bad digestive.
And or bad digestion even. And next to the Power of the Doctor, the Power of the Doctor got a few things wrong. But it sits together really well. It's enjoyable. It's pacey. You're not left, as you said, looking at your watch to see how long is left. It just flows through. It's a lot of fun. And it ends well. And then ends with a shock. So
I was surprised. And another quick thing I was surprised was how quickly John Bishop stepped out after the first opening. And that was quite a surprise.
It was, yeah. Yeah. I wonder why they did it like that. I suppose just to centre it around the Doctor and Yaz, I guess, and you've got all these other companions coming in, and maybe.
Yeah. I think yes, and obviously it was his last episode, and he does come back later, albeit a lot later. Yeah, it was. I thought, you know, it was nice to see Graham again as well. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, it was.
There was really not that much that really was. No, it was nice to see Ace take on a Dalek. We knew that was coming.
Yeah.
But that was good scenes with Graham. Weird dynamic there.
Yes.
Mildly disturbed.
Are they dating now? Is that what happened there?
I don't know. Yes, it kind of felt like this is totally normal. But to me, she's still, you know, a 20-year-old, 18-year-old. And he's a granddad. But yeah. No, oh, hang on. Yeah, they're about the same. It was... a massive crazy episode, but I think that's the point, isn't it? It's like the Sea Devils one was quite a crazy episode as well, but didn't work. This was a crazy episode, very much as we've said before, in the Flux vein. I think what was nice about the Flux was it kind of gave a bit of will, and I think Vinda being in it probably helped with this. It did give the Whittaker era a kind of world building. You could almost feel the universe of Whittaker in the same way that you could feel the universe of Tennant.
Yeah.
Which, you know, with the Jadoon and it, there was a kind of a feeling of a universe there.
The show's more prepared to just go wherever it needs to go as well, isn't it? Rather than that, the more traditional thing of dropping the TARDIS and then no one can go anywhere.
Yes, once absolutely. They're disembarked.
The Jodie Whittaker team can go anywhere within the confines of the story rather than just being stuck in one place, which, and that happens a lot of times, especially throughout the Flux and through this episode.
Yes, and the season before as well, there was quite a bit of that. And I like that. I think that sometimes can be a way of keeping it fresh. And I think with a show which, especially when you get, as we've said before, like Base Under Siege episodes, they can become a bit predictable and done because we've seen them so often set in that same sort of space. The dynamics become very obvious. But if you're jumping around a lot, it stops you from being able to kind of predict where it's going. And I think that's probably why Chibnall started using it a fair bit, sort of through season two, and then, as you say, the Flux. But then at the same time, you know, he did that very good Christmas episode this last year, which again was just set in the same space and showed that could be done as well. I'm kind of hoping that with a few years, people look back at Zeros, I think we said last time, and go, actually, there's some quite good stuff there. I wonder if it'll have a bit of a Cartmel vibe to it. You know, the timeless child will perhaps seem less frustrating to people and more accepted in the same way that, you know, Cartmel's master plan wasn't always accepted very well by Doctor Who fans. They didn't like the idea of sort of drudging up this who is he and this sort of controlling, manipulating Doctor.
Mm. I mean, at another time, we will look back over the Chris Chibnall years properly. We've kind of already started, haven't we, a few months ago. So there's those to listen to. We'll do it properly once we have the benefit of these two, or certainly this last episode, behind us and digested and everything. It's only 2 days later. It's been a strange few days for me. I've got my days all mixed up. I barely know what day it is. And I'm still thinking about the episode, which hasn't happened for a long time with Doctor Who. And it's not just that is a killer cliffhanger as well, because it's literally on a cliff. And it's also got Broadchurch vibes as well, the location. And I'm just thinking that was fun, and that's how, you know, that's what you want from Doctor Who, don't you? Don't you just want to watch it and have fun?
Yeah, I think so. I thought it was fun. I mean, obviously, we wouldn't expect them to be doing all that sort of nostalgia or reunion things all the time, but...
Oh, no.
Yeah, I thought it was a really well-balanced blast of craziness with all the little things that made, as I say, made me feel very emotional. Seeing all these people come back and sort of become part of this big family again when you've got a show which, you know, like other, really only compared to soaps and Star Trek, I guess, to some degree, that has such a long history, such a complex history, and, you know, people have grown old with, and some have obviously have passed away since. It's just I don't know, it kind of feels these moments where we sort of get to celebrate all that in a good package is really special. And I really enjoyed that. I really, really enjoyed that. And just those, it's funny, isn't it? Just, I mean, I didn't really need to have a long scene with Mel, but I really enjoyed just seeing the character being there, that acknowledgement of that era, you know, the acknowledgement of Colin, who's obviously had quite a fractious relationship with the actual television show.
Yes.
It's great to see him get an opportunity to, you know, properly be there. And McCoy is, as we've said before, you know, my favourite. And, you know, we've not really had anything like that. So to actually have McCoy have a decent scene, it just seems right. It seems, you know, it seems respectful almost to that legacy. And we can move on from that. You know, we don't need to keep doing this. I was very satisfied with that. I felt, yeah, I've seen McCoy, I've seen Ace, I've seen Tegan and the Fifth Doctor. you know, it's good to see Colin. I feel content. We can, and then again, yeah, and Ian, God.
Ian Chesterfieldton.
Yes.
Yes.
Poor,
I mean,
guy. You say she. even in old age, the doctor's still managing to slap his head around.
We were coming up to 2023 in a few weeks' time. So then Doctor Who, and you know, with the whole thing of it being Doctor Who's birthday starts again. I do wonder, given who we've just seen in the episode, in those short starring guest role there, might we see a sequel to the Five-ish Doctors reboot? I've heard a rumour that there might be something.
I think that would be fun. I think they should. The first one was very good.
It was.
It's funny, isn't it, that up until recently, I've never been a great believer in... I've never really liked fan-facing humour. I always find it a bit niche and, I don't know, makes me... I just don't like it. I don't like it. And yet, at the same time, the Five-ish Doctors did it really well.
Yeah.
I didn't cringe at all. I thought that was... It just seemed to have that right balance of... stuff that fans would get, but also this quite gentle and amusing tale of these out of touch, unwanted actors trying to reclaim their glory in a, yeah. in a really, there was just something quite gentle about it. And we're seeing that more, you know, with the Star Trek Lower Decks and how that has really sort of become very much embraced by a Star Trek fandom. And I never really imagined Star Trek fans, I know this is a cruel thing to say, having that sort of sense of humour, which I think just shows how our medias and how people talk about groups just can portray the actual truths of what they're like. And that was kind of a ballsy move to actually do that show. Yeah. So yeah, another Five-ish Doctors would be good.
It would.
Get Eccleston involved. That would be, I could see him doing like his characters from The A-Word.
Yeah, when you said, I'm no disrespect to Christopher Eccleston, who I do like as an actor, I did feel all the humour just being drained out of it when you said that.
Well, that would be what was so funny about it. You wouldn't be having any of that humour.
I'm sure it'd be fine.
We'll see where it goes. I mean, I wouldn't be entirely surprised if we get some more cameos next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully there'll be different ones. I wonder whether Davis will perhaps focus a little more on the new series where
perhaps.
Chibnall had...
Well, yeah.
Chibnall's
no Capaldi,
was
no Matt Smith.
Yeah.
And no, as far as I know, Matt Smith isn't involved with the Dragons at the moment because they started shooting the second series of that. So I doubt it would have been anything to do with that. So, although, then again, it depends when they filmed Power of the Doctor, I guess. But, yeah. And, of course, he's got very long blonde hair. Because that can't be a wig. It's immense.
Well, he's got round that before, hasn't he? In the
well, indeed, he has. Yes, he has, yes. Well, yes. Well, I mean, usually, in time on a tradition, James, we typically issue some sort of rating to episodes.
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to say 9. And I'm just saying, well, what am I really complaining about there? Tegan's miraculous survival from falling down a shaft. Sort of like she's a bush as if she's trying to counter Legopolis and show the doctor that you can do it. As I say, Vinda was fine. You know, there was just... my only grumble is that no one still mentioned that bloody flux and whether, you know, whether the universe still exists. Clearly it must do, but I'd have to... I'd probably give it a 10. I know we can say, well, nothing can be perfect, but it's like, well, I sat, I enjoyed, I got a lot of, it made me emotional as well. You know, I don't get emotional easily. I don't have that many emotions.
Yeah.
But seeing these surprise reunions that I was not expecting, which are so embedded in my DNA and done so well. I mean, it gave me everything I wanted to be given. I mean, yeah, Day of the Doctor sort of made sailing acknowledgement to Ian Chesterton in the school, and you got some of the recent Doctors back, then you got those rather shoddy clips of the Doctors when they were helping Gallifrey out. It was nice, but this actually gave me pretty much everything I could ask it to give me. It gave me Ace and the Seventh Doctor. It gave Tegan and it gave Ian, for God's sake. And God, I never thought I would have loved to have seen Mel back when I was a young teen. I was glad when the character left, but no. Bonnie Langford's done a lot of good stuff with that character. It was good that she's acknowledged in there. And Colin Baker, how could I not say that's not a great experience? Plus a crazy story with a fun master. Yeah, maybe it'll overtop occasionally, but he played it perfectly as well. He did exactly what he was meant to do. And he felt pretty threatening when he was in the TARDIS with Yaz. They didn't even screw up the Doctor and Yaz, to be fair. They didn't screw up anything really that I can think of. So 10, why not? Let's be generous.
Okay.
Go on, give it six.
I don't know what to say. Yeah. All right, let's give it 10.
Well, if we both enjoyed it, it meant a lot to. Yeah,
Yeah.
I can't think what else it could have done. I think that's my point, is I
Yeah, yeah,
can't
yeah.
think in my limited imagination where it could have done better. As I say, my only slight grumble was is I don't particularly like the Cybermasters. I mean, yeah, were the Daleks underpowered? Well, they weren't important to this story. They were kind of peripheral to it. They
You're
did
going
their
down to
job.
nine. Are you going down to nine?
No,
Okay.
I don't. I'm not. I can't. I mean, like you said, and I really do like that point that the Cybermasters were total Lee Sullivan era Doctor Who comic strip. And if we kind of acknowledge the comic strip as being its own relevance, then why not have a sort of crazy cyber design like that?
Okay. Yeah.
Stop being so precious, James. It was good.
It was good. Let's go for 10 out of 10. Two tens for the power of the Doctor. I mean, I imagine, we were very, we found it very difficult to be complimentary about Chris Chibnall's first series episodes, and the ratings on those aren't great. And I imagine at least one of them was very low, definitely below five. So, and that might even be in the second series. So for it to be a 10. Two tens. That's great. That's well. I mean, we can't say anything. That's the end of the podcast for this week. Not ever. We're not killing the show just because we've gone for 10 out of 10 on the Power of the Doctor.
There is something actually really perverse, and I think the only time we've ever given 10 out of 10 is to an era which is, by so many of the people who listen to this podcast as being kind of the worst era they've experienced in a long time. And here we are, sort of swanning in this era's finale. And
I see the irony and I am struggling with it, but at the end of the day, as the footballers say, it was a fun piece of television that
yeah.
did everything it set out to do and then ends with an insane cliffhanger, and none of it was boring. It was fun all the way. There's no way you couldn't give it top marks. Nine at least, but you've convinced me that I was going for nine, but you've convinced me it's a 10.
Yeah, I didn't cry at all at any point. No, I'd have been really emotional to do that.
Okay.
It was really, I found it really. Well, like I say, this has been a part of our lives. I mean, our lives the last 10 years talking about it, but it's encoded into what we've seen. And when you get things like this, it is like a reunion. It is like a reunion of old faces. It's incredible. And they Chibnall did it in a way that neither Davis nor Moffat really pulled off.
Yeah, I'd agree. I've been looking for, because this is part of the BBC Centenary, and I've really been looking forward to the Harry Enfield and Paul Whitehouse thing that's coming along in a couple of nights' time, because it's kind of a sequel to the one that they did with the BBC Two one a few years ago. So that was going to be my highlight of the Centenary, but now I think this probably is it. I don't, I'm very selective with how I consume television, for want of a modern term, or a better modern term, and so I'm very picky about things. I will watch Doctor Who. And I'll watch a handful of other things. And if there's some decent comedy by people that I admire, then I will watch that. And that was going to be, I was sure that was going to be the highlight. And now this has just blown everything out of the water, really. It was just such good fun. We've hit an hour. We really need to wrap things up.
I know. But I just to add to that, again, just to justify it one more time, is that Day of the Doctor, I remember when I watched that, I was not half as impressed, even though it's got some great lines in there and there's lots of callbacks. But I was disappointed because I thought that was, as you say, one of those anniversary moments where you would get some of the old Doctors back and they were just kind of not.
Yeah.
And I came away feeling that was good, but I feel a bit let down. Can't be let down by that.
I think there's some cinematographic advantages for the Day of the Doctor, but in terms of a televisual experience or a cinematic experience, I suppose, I would rather watch The Power of the Doctor in the cinema than the Day of the Doctor in the cinema.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There was more of an emotional connection for me there than I got with Day of the Doctor at all. I mean, obviously the curator was a good moment. I'll give them that.
Yeah, it was a surprise and
a nice bit. But yeah. But again, it's like difference between an 8 and a 10, isn't it? That's what we're saying.
Yes, it is. It is. Or the difference between a Whittaker and a Tennant. Anyway.
Yeah. God.
That is it for this week's Cast Urbis podcast. We'll be back next week, and I think I'll be talking to Gareth Cavanagh. Until then, it's goodbye.